Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today, I'm just a tad bit excited about the episode. We've been working on this. I say months all the time, but literally it's months because we've been working multiple schedules to kind of even out and work out and get everybody on the same time frame from all different time zones. We would like to welcome today four guests, all district directors of the NATA. I'd like to welcome, we'll go numerically, District 1, Director Vicki Graham, Associate Professor of American Public University. She oversees Connecticut, Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Vermont. Welcome back, Vicki. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Happy to be here.
Thanks for being here. And now, new to the program, District 2, Tanya Dargush. That's from it. Delaware, New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. How are you doing today, Tanya?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on.
Congratulations on your full-time retirement. I'm a tad bit jealous. I understand you are doing clinical per diem work now to stay active and keep everything going.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm a little jealous. I got a few years for that one. And then also new to the show, District 5 Director, Rob Marshall. How are you doing today, Rob?
Outstanding. Looking forward to it.
I appreciate it. And you represent Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Dakota. You are the director of the Columbus Fieldhouse, manager for athletic training services at Columbus Community Hospital, correct?
Yep, that's all of them. A couple too many.
How do you get that all on the business card? I'm just curious.
Well, it's the name badge. Luckily, they took my picture off because there wasn't enough room. So that's.
I believe it. That's a lot of title. And then we'd like to welcome back District 7's director, Valerie Herzog, who oversees Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming. She is the professor and chair of the Department of Athletic Training at Weber State University. How are you doing, Valerie?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for being here. We enjoyed having you last time. You and Vicki were awesome. And that's really where the idea came from. After talking with both of you, we're like, oh, we gotta do this. This would be so fun. You guys ready to jump in here? Let's start talking about our wonderful profession and what's going on in the field of athletic training, right?
Absolutely.
I'm going to start with something that's probably hitting home to many of us. Over the last year, this has really sparked the fire and the interest for me in athletic training. And one thing I've noticed, and I'd really like to start here because as district directors, you're going to be able to give us more insight. What we've noticed, especially since 2020, one thing we're seeing is declining membership. And as an advocate for the profession, I don't get it. I just don't. We have to be members to have a voice. But what are you seeing in the districts with declining membership? And what are some of these challenges you think that might be attributing to it? Maybe we can start with one of our new guests, Tanya. Would you mind going there for us first?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's true. We've been seeing a decline the last few years, and that's something that we're really working hard on. to make sure that we're meeting the members where they're at. It's been a tough road, but we've been working really hard to improve that. And I do believe in some cases, NATA kind of represents everything athletic training, right? There's a lot of polarization sometimes, especially nowadays. And you kind of understand where some of the people are coming from. And that's something that we're really working hard to bridge that gap and gain members. We've recently made headway gaining membership within the students as well as new athletic trainers to the profession.
Valerie, I know over on the West Coast, and you're kind of West Coast-ish. What are you seeing out in your district, District 7?
The staff has actually asked us to reach out personally to some of the members who've not renewed and find out, you know, what's going on, you know, what are they thinking? And what I've heard from the members is, you know, I don't really see the benefit of NATA membership to me personally. Like I get for the profession, but not for me personally. And what I realized is that, you know, over the years, the NATA has produced so many resources, right? All these committees have produced these invaluable toolkits and resources for everyone. And we now have so much on the website that some of it's hard to find, right? And you just have so much stuff. One of the things the NATA is working on is really trying to make it easier to find what you're looking for resource-wise. You know, we also just started including, you know, unlimited access to our online education platform for members. And I think that's a huge benefit, you know, but I think, you know, we'll come out with, you know, the NATA news and we'll highlight some resources and a member will look at it and say, well, that's not useful for me personally. And therefore, I don't see the value in my membership, but trying to make sure that they realize how much there really is available to them. Not just the Educate platform, but all of the resources the committees have developed over the years. And then also trying to remind them of the big picture, right? Which is the NATA works on behalf of the entire profession. So for example, if you saw recently, the Army is cutting back on the number of athletic trainers they employ, and the NATA mobilized very quickly, you know, a huge group of people and letter writing campaign and took a group to DC actually just before, which was perfect timing, but then also again after to meet with, you know, members of Congress. You know, I think those members are like, oh, wow, look at all the NATA can do for us in the profession. And you know, you may not realize what you need the NATA for today, but you might really need them tomorrow. And the fewer members, we can't do as much because that's a big revenue source for us.
So true. And you said something in there and it sparked a truth. So there was an oops on my renewal this year. I got a personal email from a gentleman who we won't name, but his name's Scott Saylor. And from him, and granted, he's not the district president now, but he's been up there before and up at the NATA before, as we all know. And the personal email was, Eli, why aren't you renewing your membership? Now, first off, it was an oops. The card didn't run through. I'm like, wait a minute, what? Huh? So you say personally reaching out, that made me pause first off and go, wow, Scott cares about me professionally, personally. And for some people, that's a aha moment. Wow, they really do care. That's, I think, a great, in my case, way to fix an oops. But really to pull people back in and say, hey, you matter. Be a member.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. A couple of the members I called said, no one's ever called me before. Thank you so much. You know, and just listen to them and hear their concerns and what's important to them. And they said it was really impactful.
Now, Rob, over there in District 5, what are you seeing in your states?
So I think there's a couple of things, and some of the points that were already mentioned are absolutely spot on. I think there are some, in District 5, we have a lot of historic programs that it's just kind of assumed that you're a member and that you volunteer and you do those things. It's just been handed down through the generations of athletic trainers. So our numbers really have stayed pretty solid in District 5. And we really haven't had the drop-off that we saw nationally. I think one thing, you know, you're in the middle of the country, and the one thing that the NATA does that truly no other organization can do for athletic training is give everyone that national voice, exactly to the stuff we do in Washington, but to the military, you know, whether it's third party reimbursement. There are so many different issues that, you know, maybe they do a small segment of each population, but if you look at in totality, that is your national voice. When there needs to be a national response, you need to have it, and not just a national organization, but a strong national organization. And so we've had that conversation with our district. And the other side, I think sometimes members forget. They're so, well, that's the national, and I'm not going to deal with OSHA, right? I'm not in public safety, or I'm not going to deal with the military. But when you get it, when you drill down to what actually you as an athletic trainer, no matter where you are, it's your practice act. And any of those states that have gone through legislation, whether it's practice acts, or, you know, we've had some of those states that have added loan forgiveness and reimbursement, some of those types of policies. When that time comes, people call back and ask the NATA for that help, that guidance, that governmental affairs, that, you know, the networking, how can we do the letter writing campaigns? So when people say, well, okay, fine, the NATA is a national voice, but truly it's more than that. The resources that they bring may be specific setting, whether you're collegiate or some of those toolkits, but at the end, your ability to practice comes down to your license. And the NATA, you know, we've done boot camps, we've done multiple levels of boot camps. They also assist those states with searches for lobbyists or any of those information where, you know, a state association truly is just grassroots volunteers. Where at the NATA level, we're fortunate enough to have some paid professional staff that do assist all athletic trainers. And, you know, whether you're a member or not, when it comes to your practice act, it's going to affect you. You know, the NATA is about helping the profession. So there are some people that will benefit from those practice acts or whichever legislation they're doing, but they're doing that on the backs of members.
I saw Vicky nodding a little bit. So I'd love to hear your opinion on that too.
Well, I think that what Rob says is true, that, you know, let's face it, when something, you know, the proverbial, you know, what hits the fan, everybody calls NATA. Whether they're members or not, that's who they look to for help. And we do have professional staff that are experts in their area that assist us, particularly our governmental affairs team. But we truly have to have a good understanding that even though maybe OSHA doesn't affect you because you don't work in that setting, or I don't work in the Army, so H2F, they're pulling athletic trainers, that doesn't affect me. It affects other people in the profession. It affects our colleagues. And in the long run, it affects all of us, because every gain we make in any setting helps to enhance our ability to practice in that setting. And eventually it leads to higher pay, which is probably the biggest issue that athletic trainers talk about all the time, forever. And as salaries continue, and salaries are going up, salaries continue to go up, and they go up in some settings. They maybe don't go up either at the same rate or even at all in other settings. And those are the settings where there's this perceived shortage. So to be in one setting and say, those things don't affect me, they really do. They really will. And we're seeing it really right now in real time, probably for the first time in that I can remember, that we're really seeing that trend of salaries are going up in some settings and not in others as a result of our enhanced ability to practice in those settings. So everything's connected. It's all connected. It's not, we're not practicing in a vacuum just because we're in one particular setting.
Now, I couldn't agree with you more. We had a really, to bounce off that, we had a real interesting job posting out here in California. Now, I felt the knife in the back. I felt Brutus hit me when you guys started talking about licensure and regulation. Again, I'm in California, so we're excited about the win we got this year with title recognition. We'll take it. It's a step. We're going to get to licensure one day, and I hope to be around to see it. But you mentioned one of the questions that I was going to bring up next, challenges. And we all know, especially at the secondary school level where I practice, sometimes the pay ain't great. Now, they just had a posting, and I don't know if it's been filled yet, at a local high school out here in Southern California. Starting salary range was between $95,000 and $125,000. Yeah, Valerie's, wow. That's what I said too. Wow. But yeah, I'm not leaving for that. I like where I'm at. So I saw that and quickly contacted a few colleagues who I knew as happy as say I am or my colleagues at St. Francis are. Said, "Hey, well, if you're interested, take a look at this pay." Now, living out in California, cost of living is a little more expensive, but hey, how often do you hear a 95 to 125 range at a high school starting out? That's I was stunned. Because I know what I started at, and it was nowhere even in that ballpark. Yeah, I was probably on the East Coast in comparison to that West Coast job. So, man, off of that, definitely we see the question of payment, or the question of salary, or the question of how much am I going to make over a 9-month contract, 10-month contract, or should I be a 12-month contract? But every district, every state's a little different. What are you seeing currently, Valerie, in your district as one of the more pressing and important issues that are evolving in the profession?
So I agree that salaries are a big issue, and I think Vicky really hit the nail on the head that in several settings, like high schools, the salaries have come way up. And in the college and university settings, some have met the challenge and others are still lagging behind. And those are the same ones complaining, gosh, we can't fill our positions. But this is where, as Vicky and Rob talked about, that a rising tide lifts all boats. That if we have more job opportunities for athletic trainers, right, they have other choices. They don't have to work at a university for $35,000. They can go work in the military and make 60. They can go take your high school job in California and make 90. I have a student who took a job with Delta at the airport. Starting range was at 70 in Utah. I mean, these are good salaries. And so people are like, well, why do I care if I can work in the military or Delta? Well, guess what? Now those colleges have to compete to get you on their staff. And so they're going to have to raise their salaries to compete. And some have and some haven't. And I mean, I know of some colleges who haven't, and they're really struggling. They're really struggling to fill those positions. And they came back to the NATA. We actually, president at the time, Kathy Derringer, was invited to go to a meeting of all the NCAA athletic directors. And they said, what is going on? We can't fill these positions. You've created this shortage by moving to the master's degree. And Kathy explained to them, we have just as many athletic trainers as we ever had, if not more. There's not a shortage of certified athletic trainers. There's a shortage of athletic trainers who want to work for you in those settings. And we hear the same thing from athletic trainers across the country. What they want is time, money, and respect, right? They don't want to work 100 hours a week, right? They want a salary that can, take care of their family and prepare for their future and send their kids to college. And they want to be respected in the setting. And those are the three biggest challenges we've heard across the country. And the NATA is working hard. And the athletic directors heard Kathy loud and clear. And some of them went back and made significant changes, and others went back and said, we're a big Division I, people will come no matter what. But I've gotten calls from big Division I schools saying, do you have any grads? It's August and we're desperate. We can't fill our Division I men's basketball position, right? Something that everybody wants, climate controlled athletic training, and they still can't find anybody to take the job. So, they're gonna have to wake up. And I said, well, you're gonna have to get your salaries up if you want to get good people and you want to retain good people.
Yeah, I was a little stunned not too long ago. I look perused through the job boards because I'm curious. Don't worry, guys, I'm not leaving St. Francis, any of my students listening right now. But it's a curiosity. Want to see where it's, and I was stunned. There was a D1 program offering a job at 34 or 35,000, and that was a 10-month contract. I'm like, what? That's it? You can make more than that being an intern at, I don't know, a shoe store. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I'm sure that's the reason. You probably nailed it, which makes total sense. And I see Tanya nodding, so I'd love to go to Tanya and get her insight.
Absolutely. First, I'm going to say is I feel that we're in an unprecedented time where they're actually giving sign-on bonuses to athletic trainers to take positions.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
We're able to negotiate, and it's all about supply and demand. And we're in that position now because we've expanded in some of these other areas. We really came to light as a profession as well during the pandemic, where they turned to athletic trainers to help with a lot of the public health initiatives during that time. And I think that kind of put us, like, thrust us into the limelight. And I do believe that young athletic trainers coming out are in a great position right now. As in regards to those positions that are 35,000, a lot of times those Division I are saying that, oh, it's like an internship, you know, where they need to get experience or something along those lines. But can I tell you, some of the Division III are offering great pay, you know, for young professionals coming out of the market. It's just, it's there for the taking. So I agree wholeheartedly. That's something that we're seeing across the board. I do see it as well in the secondary school level. They're having a shortage in that area as well. So they're having to increase salaries to attract individuals. Seeing a lot in New Jersey. We're seeing that kind of flow or that change. And it's just an exciting time, actually, to be an athletic trainer. We just got to move forward together on this.
I totally agree. I mean, I know what I made on my first paycheck, and it was nowhere near that. I just kind of laugh. My daughter makes more now as an MA who's prepping for grad school than I did with my degree and a certification coming out. Rob, would love to hear from you. Please tell me what's going on out in your direction.
Well, I think the other thing, you know, the Valerie mentioned that we kind of found that time, money, and respect. And the one thing that we have tried to make it possible, again, for me, it goes back to that national voice, President Derringer being able to come in and speak with the NCAA, right? They're not speaking to the individual state association. They're going to go to the NATA. So the stronger we are as a national organization, the stronger the representation is. And if you look at the collegiate setting,
phenomenal point. Yeah.
Why? How many athletic trainers work in an NCAA setting? That's a lot of athletic trainers. So when you look at where's my national voice and who is speaking on my behalf, that's representing a lot of people. The other side to it, one of our fellow board people, that she came up with work-life ratio, that term. And that, we used to call it work-life balance, but as an athletic trainer, if you truly think there's balance, I think you got into the wrong field. Because there
ain't
are just
that the truth,
year,
yeah.
Right, where it's time to go and we got to go. But I think where athletic trainers have always struggled, or at least I did, was when the work isn't there, when the schedule isn't so strong, it's time to step away. I actually have a policy with my staff where I'll chase you home. Like, you have to leave. It's not a conversation. Go away. Just to be able to have that guilt-free time back to go do it. And then the other side of that is staffing, right? So especially for the high school athletic trainers, which the vast majority of our staff is high school athletic trainers, because of the unique position I'm in, we now have a floater, which is me. I was at the secondary school levels my whole career. But having that extra person where when I want to go on that vacation in the middle of football season, or I have a wedding, or I have a whatever, being able to have some of that freedom, at least for our staff, we take that very, very seriously and building that into our structure. Where if you look at a collegiate athletic trainer, you know, if they're working football, there's 6 months where they're not going anywhere, no way, shape, or form. And
no life, no family, no nothing in that setting. Yeah.
So we've tried to find that work-life ratio for people. Does the pay have to be the best? Well, it should be. But if it's not, you certainly better have at least some form of work-life ratio where you have some freedom. Our standing joke on staff was we were allowed to keep so many hours of PTO. And after you accrued so many hours, they'd start sending messages like, you need to do something with this. Your bank is too high. Why are you not ever taking vacation? Well, tell me as a high school athletic trainer, when? I get a 5-day moratorium over Christmas. And they say, well, you should be going somewhere in the summer. Well, we do our education. We did NATA convention or state stuff. Then we also, you know, everybody practices 12 hours a day because there's no regulated season. So it's even worse.
Only 12? Wait a minute.
Yeah. So being able to build that in, and I think that's one of the last things that even those colleges that have stepped up the pay side of it, being able to properly staff so that you could have a chance to go, like, I know I have a tournament this weekend, but my brother's getting married. Okay, well, how can we solve that for you? And there just hasn't been that proper staffing level. Obviously, at the high school level, it's, you know, you have a lot of people that are just kind of out on that island, which leads, we haven't really talked about it, but for me, that's where that burnout, and I hate that word because it makes me so sad, but a lot of that has to do with just how we as athletic trainers, we're the first ones in, we're the last ones out, you know, we're doing it all, and we're cleaning up the bleachers when we're done. That mentality of just kind of running ourselves into the ground to some degree created it, but I think the bosses that are above us in the position that I'm in is to ensure that that doesn't happen. You have to build it in. You have to build it into the staff. You have to build it into the schedule. And I think that's another way to lower the burnout, but maybe just improve the quality of life for each individual athletic trainer.
Couldn't agree with you more. As I've said many times on different episodes, you know, we're very fortunate at our school. We have two of us. I'm the senior, we'll go with that. That sounds good. Senior athletic trainer. I've got nearly 30 years on staff, or certified, and 27 on staff. The next one down, Joel, has 15 as he's going. And with that, it has been interesting to bring on a new hire. And fresh out of school, and seeing everything that our peer wants to do. One thing I've noticed, and you touched on it for a second, I believe athletic trainer at the secondary school level, there should be at least two, because so many of us come out so green, so new, so young, not knowing exactly what it's like to be on our own. And Tanya's laughing, so we'll start with you, Tanya, because I'm sitting there going, I remember thinking, oh, I got this. Oh, I got this. And the first week, I'm sitting there going, I ain't got this. What the heck am I going to do? Fake it till I make it. I mean, it's nuts. But having, you know, that senior person to bounce things off of, and not being, like you said, on the island unto yourself at the high school level, because you are the person that's in charge of everything. And you might be the only healthcare professional that that young person sees for months. Tanya, please jump in.
Oh, I was just, this is my wheelhouse. We traveled all over the country with an ATA sponsored a group of six of us that went all over the country to teach secondary school athletic trainers how to negotiate for additional positions and pay and raise and to try to improve that situation. And it's great because then over the years, this was back in the day, over the years, you've really seen that piece of it change and being able to show the benefits, the healthcare benefits, not only to the patients or the students at the school, but just overall prevention and all the things that come with adding staff and athletic trainers. And that's the other piece of it. I think a lot of people do not always realize that. We have NATA is amazing resources in regards to things that will help you negotiate if you're starting out as a new athletic trainer in something that hasn't been established. Tools there, job descriptions, you name it, they're all there. And it was so great not to have to reinvent the wheel, to have those tools to start off with and be able to work from there. I think that's something that we've seen as a need across the board with members and have had a lot of great professionals over the years provide those things and keep it current.
That would be, you know, the NATA has produced all that, and that can be a tough road at a public school to try to get that extra person. I would say back it up even a step further. Again, it goes back to whether it's your state organization, your district, or your national organization, having a mentor. Having, if you are on that island, having just another athletic trainer that's been around that you can call. If you look at your state association, if you look at the NATA, there are so many different mentor mentee programs that are available. And I think some people kind of have that, like, it's just a gimmick. I don't want to do it. For me, I was blessed to have a couple of seasoned professionals that I could call that were, and they'd answer the phone every time and they took that call, even if it was just to, like, how do I handle that coach? Or, like, you won't believe what these parents just said to me. Having that available, if you're that one on the island, you know, for us, we have a large staff of 12, 13, I don't remember how many we are now, where, you know, we can interact and go have breakfast tomorrow and kind of have that vent. But there's a lot of high school athletic trainers and probably just in general, a lot of athletic trainers that don't have that support around them. And that's where a membership in an organization like the NATA and your state, taking advantage of those opportunities to just have somebody to call, to lean on, until you get that second person that you work with is it's invaluable. I think it would lower kind of some of those younger people that like, I was there for 3 years, I was drowning, I went to work for Amazon, I just walked away. Well, I think some of that's on us as seasoned professionals to make sure they understand how important it is to sounding board for them.
Vicky, I see you nodding, and I keep saying that, but please jump in. Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely.
I mean, I agree with everything that's been said here. I think one thing that's come to mind for me is you hear Rob talk about what he's done at his institution to help create some work-life ratio and have a good work environment and things like that. This is just networking. I mean, maybe you hear this that Rob Marshall on a podcast, but if you go to a state meeting or district meeting or the NATA convention, you're going to meet other people. And you're going to meet other people from all over the country if you come to NATA and hear about how they address certain problems. And it might not be in the speaker space. It might be, but it also might be walking around the convention center or somebody that you meet at an event in the evening or sitting in the bar in the hotel. And you start to create a network and develop a network so that maybe I'm in Connecticut, but I met this guy, Rob Marshall, at a bar at NATA. And this is what he told me about how he manages things at work. And now I know I can call this guy up, you
And
know,
Rob
and he's in
Marshall at that bar
Nebraska.
might be holding a sign from a local event, if
I'm at
my
least
understanding at the
scouting.
bar.
I'm
Yeah.
scouting the signs.
Scouting the signs. Okay,
I'm
got it.
really,
But
realistically, it might be an ice cream parlor.
okay, good to know. Good to know. You know what? Really, Vicky, I couldn't agree with you more.
Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to AACITest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown.
And it's horrible to say, probably my best networking has always been, my associate Joel will laugh, at the bar. You network, you meet people, you talk. That's where I met the NATA president this year at our CATA event. And I turn and I look, I'm like, why is that face so familiar? And they introduced me. I'm like, oh, yeah, all right. Nice to meet you.
You're that guy on the magazine cover.
Yeah,
There you
exactly.
go.
There you go, Valerie. I mean, networking, I know we talked about it way back when, and Vicky, we've talked about it. It is so important, especially as you're first coming out, to get that networking opportunity. Do you agree, disagree? How do you see that role of networking really playing into mentoring and or just issues in your district?
That's a great point. And I totally agree that networking is super important. And it can happen in a bar or anywhere, but I tell my students, you know, if you really want to build a relationship with somebody, volunteer. Get involved with the profession, serve on a committee,
So
volunteer
true.
at your state, district, or national convention. It's one thing to go up and shake somebody's hand and say, "Hey, I'm Valerie Herzog. I'm at Weber State. I'd love to get to know you." But it's very different when you actually sit next to them at a registration table for 2 or 3 hours and you kind of have more organic conversations and they see how much you care about the profession too, and you really build a relationship. And then you can really call on those people. And you know, if you've seen some posts on NATA Gather recently, I think Scott Galloway, who started kind of a thread on what has been the impact of volunteering and getting involved in the profession for you. And everybody overwhelmingly just said it was the number one way for them to network, but it was so rewarding, right? It's, you know, you think when we call people and we try to encourage them to serve on committees and they go, gosh, you know, what's the time commitment? And, you know, is there any compensation? And we're like, you're gonna get back way more than you give, I promise. Just trust me, just jump in. And, you know, once people do, you know, and then their term ends on that committee, they're like, what can I do next? And I have people like, I'm already on this committee. Can I also be on that committee? And it's like, well, we kind of want to spread it around. But, you know, once you're in, you realize how valuable it is, not just to the profession and the association, but for you personally. And I think people forget that sometimes, but it really is amazing. And I think the best way to network.
Vicky.
I would also say that, you know, there are people that maybe can't say that at some point in their life, they don't have time to volunteer, and that's okay. But you create your own network. If you're in a traditional setting, you create a network by meeting people on the sidelines, really, or making an effort to, maybe you're in a high school situation and people don't travel, you make an effort to, you know people in your conference or something like that. But I think you have to create some opportunities sometimes. You can create a local network and then expand it when you do have more time. But I do think it's really, really, really important to attend some in-person events. And I know that's a trend to try to get everything online, but you can't substitute some face-to-face conversation and meeting people in creating a network. And you also can't substitute it if you're going to get any hands-on type of continuing ed. So I think it really is important to make space for that and not just take the easy way and say, hey, I'm going to do online continuing ed. I think you'll gain so much more, like we say, by showing up in person, even if it's once a year, to a state, district, or national meeting, or even a local, and I said no big states. I'm sure you have some local regions in California maybe that put on events, Eli. So I think you can't substitute for that.
I couldn't agree more. We are such a hands-on profession. I mean, we really are. And it's a calling. You got to be a people person. If you're not a people person, you need to get out of this profession. It shows real quick. I mean, at the high school level, these young students know really fast. They're not dumb.
I couldn't agree more in regards to volunteering as well as networking with so many people. I mean, we're so busy as athletic trainers, so sometimes it's hard to take that time. We have created, I did it along with Vicky. She started it where we got on and with the membership and just to chat about stuff. It didn't have to be a specific topic or anybody talking about anything in particular or lecturing. Just was an opportunity to people to ask questions, not necessarily NATA questions, but just talk about day-to-day stuff. And it went over really well. I've noticed.
I love that. That's
well.
Awesome.
Yeah. And you'll even see at national, recreating more situations where it's a social setting where you can be, where it's networking, not just sitting in a spot where you're lecturing. Having more hands-on type workshops and things to complement lectures. So those are different areas that they're working on. I know even at our state organization in New Jersey, they're creating local meet and greets and they're very well attended. People, they stopped, they did one at a brewery and then now they're doing one in North Jersey as well. They actually even made athletic training themed beer. It was really cool.
Sign me
so
up.
Just,
I'm in.
Just
yes.
Some of the things, like, we need to do that more and more now because we're all talking through Zoom, right? We don't have that contact like we did. It's so much easier just to turn on the computer. But to Val's point, it's so important to have those resources. I can tell you as a volunteer, say I had to adapt to something with lacrosse and I had a question about equipment. It was amazing. Like, normally you try to Google it and figure it out. But because of your volunteer situation, you know the person that created these rules and you know the person at USA Lacrosse, or you know somebody who knows somebody that worked at this and you call them up, they already have something written there. So I can tell you, just professionally as a volunteer, it's helped me tenfold and saved me a ton of time, even though you're giving time on that other side. It's good stuff.
And whether you volunteered out of just the joy of your heart or you were voluntold, as I just did with my athletic trainer on staff, Rob, we need to get our young professionals. And not even the young professionals. I mean, some of us seasoned veterans, and I'll say seasoned because I've got salt and pepper in the goatee. We've got to get these people involved. How do we do that?
We do. It takes a village. I had a strange situation. I went down. My son was at Culver Stockton, little D3 school, a little bitty town in Missouri. Went down, spent the weekend with him, and they had a football scrimmage. It's not even D3. It's NAIA. And they had a first-year master's student there that came up, and she introduced herself and didn't sound like, I'm like, where are you from? She was from Australia. first year's master student. And we just got to sit and visit, and she asked, "Well, you're from this little town in the middle of Nebraska." Yeah, yeah. And she said, I said, "Well, what are your goals? Where do you want to go?" And she said, "Well, you know, I would love to work halfway between here and home." She said that Hawaii is my destination. And I said, "Really?" I said, "Would you rather work at the high school level or the college level?" She said, "Well, what difference does that make?" And I said, "It depends on who I'm going to call to help connect you. So I need to know which level you want to be at." And she was just dumbfounded. And so we literally called a former board director, Lynn Nakagawa, and hey,
of course, yeah.
And then I called Cindy Clivio, who is the current board member, and talked to her about it. And we got done, and she, the girl just stood there stunned. And she said, "How is that possible that you have a connection like that? You've been in the middle of Nebraska your whole life." And I said, "It's 100% volunteer." That's the connections that Tanya was talking about. There is no reason a bald dude in the middle of Nebraska of 20,000 people should have any connection to something in Hawaii. But the greatest athletic trainers, the greatest people I have met have come through the volunteer. And, you know, Valerie talked about sitting next to somebody. When you go through a project or you go through a whatever on those committees, you really get to know somebody, and you know, inevitably it spills over into a personal relationship. And, you know, we have some committees that are age or, you know, how long you've been certified that are specific to that age group. Some are settings based, but it's those people that are in that daily trench that have the exact same issues that you do, and you get a chance to talk through those. If you look at the call, if you look at it, people always, well, it's it drives me nuts when they say the NATA. Well, the NATA. It's made up of just nothing but volunteer athletic trainers. Every one of us did it. There's no magic to it. It's just enough of us have raised our hands long enough where we're on a podcast. That's the only difference. It's all just volunteer work. And I agree. I think Valerie said it earlier that you'll get so much more. The highest level people I have ever been around have been when I volunteered on some of those committees.
Couldn't
and half
agree.
The time when you get on there, you're just in awe. I sit quietly because I'm afraid they'll hear me talk. And
somebody wanted to chime in a second ago.
Yeah, I just wanted to piggyback right off of that. You talked about your path to volunteering, right? And how you get people in there. I think a lot of us saw that there was a need or saw that there was something that needed to get done. Mine, for example, was I came in back then in New Jersey, and athletic trainers were only allowed to work in three settings: professional, collegiate, and high school. And I'm like, that's not fair. I can take the same person with the same injury, with the same exercises, take them across the street, and all of a sudden I get dumb, right? So I just said, it's not fair. What happened was, instead of just complaining, why don't you, they do this? Why don't you do, they do this? I got involved. So to make that change, to work towards that change, and it was a few years in the making, but guess what? It happened. So I challenge all of those individuals that see something that, hey, NATA needs to work on this, or we need to work on this as a profession. Volunteer. Volunteer, because that is your passion. And it is so amazing and rewarding when you see that change, when that happens through the efforts of what you did as a volunteer and what you did in this community of athletic trainers through NATA or whatever, that made that change and accomplished that from happening. I mean, you could even see it in California, right? It's huge.
1,000%.
So instead of just complaining, join. It'll make a world of difference.
Couldn't
and
agree.
And you better the profession and better the lives of so many other people, including
couldn't agree
our
more.
Patients.
Couldn't agree more. Because no matter what, I think it was Valerie said, rising tide lifts all the boats. I love that. And that's so true, because you are constantly helping. One comment on this podcast might catch somebody's attention in Connecticut, might catch somebody in New Mexico, might catch somebody in Iowa, might catch somebody in Texas, might catch somebody somewhere else. And we didn't even mean for it to happen. But volunteering, some people I truly respect and see as mentors have come from that. I couldn't agree more. Valerie, we're talking about all this volunteering, and we're people that we see something needs to be done. Hell, we're just going to do it. With that in mind, though, what do you think looking forward in the future as an athletic trainer, and you know, over the next 5 or 10 years, what do you think some of the issues coming down the pike are, maybe in your district or as a profession?
Oh, that's a great question. Wish I had a crystal ball. I think one of the things that's definitely on the horizon right now is the compact. And so if you're not familiar with that, so this is trying to make it easier. There's an association of state legislatures, and so they create these compacts for different professions. And every state that participates in the compact, it makes it easier for an athletic trainer to get licensed in both states, right? It removes some of the red tape. It may make it a little more affordable. So somebody like Tanya, who lives on the border of two states and want to be licensed in more than one, it makes it easier for her.
So right? Almost like reciprocity across state lines.
Not total reciprocity, yes, somewhat, but you still would have to apply, but there would be kind of this national database.
Got it.
And so if you're licensed in one state that participates in the compact, it makes it a lot easier to get licensed in another state that participates in the compact. But in order to do that, there has to be a little more standardization among the licensing acts. And so I know in a lot of states, we've been working to kind of modernize our practice acts. Some of them were written 30, 40 years ago, and you know, our scope of practice has expanded quite a bit. Another issue is background checks, right? Not every state requires ATs to get a background check. And so.
Really?
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
A lot of employers do. I think it's pretty common for an employer to require it, but not necessarily for the state to require it as a condition of getting licensure. And so that's one of the standard issues with a compact is a background check. So yeah, so when we are trying to upgrade our practice acts and we've got all this opposition, well, now we've got the support of the Office of State Legislatures behind us so that we can participate in the compact, so that we can better support military families, right, who move around a lot. That will really help states upgrade their practice acts. And I think this could be a huge boon for the profession overall.
I think that we're seeing a huge expansion of settings that we work in. And I think the challenge for all of us is to fill those positions and to continue to work with both federal legislatures and state legislatures to either expand practice acts or enhance, you know, our issue with the Army right now is really with probably the Defense Health Administration and hoping to get credentialing and privileging within the military for athletic trainers. I think that working with OSHA enhances the ability of people to work in those settings. So I think right now we have a big expansion of settings that people can practice in, but we still need to have a ways to go to make each of those allow everyone to practice at the top of their scope in each of those settings. So I think and hope over the next 5 to 10 years, we'll see those things start to occur.
Rob, up in your district, what are some of those future either goals or changes you see coming down the pike?
I really believe that, and we've been talking about it as a profession for years, third-party reimbursement. You know, at some point that we will hit that critical mass at the federal level. Obviously, you know, in different regions, we've had good luck with codes already and private payers and insurance reimbursement. I hope that the one thing is a lot of the members feel like, well, you know, I'm in this high school level, so this is never going to apply to me. Or, you know, I'm at the collegiate level, so I'm not going to turn into insurance. That really isn't the point. You know, the point is so that we talk about the different settings that we're in. This truly, you know, to be in a rehab setting or to be in a setting where you're going to use insurance and third-party reimbursement is another setting we would like available to our profession and to our members. Just because we would get to third-party reimbursement, say with federal legislation or, you know, even just with Medicare acknowledgement, it doesn't mean it's going to affect all members in a sense where they would now have to do that. High school athletic grants probably aren't ever going to do that. The difference is, if you work, especially I work in a hospital setting, your salary is based off of what you charge, what you bring in. And as athletic trainers to this point, universally, we haven't done that. So people continue to say, we are valued. We absolutely are valued. Show me a high school that's had an athletic trainer and then something happened. They moved heaven and earth to get another athletic trainer in there. Nobody's going back to the days where we just don't have an athletic trainer once they have. So the value and the worth has always been there, but it comes down to some economic side of it. And if if you are charging out X number of dollars per year that organization can recoup, your salary is going to go up. You're just more valuable as a profession. And for me, it's just one more setting. It's one more thing that would make available to our members. I think it helps with work-life balance where they get to a little bit, there'd be an option for regular 9 to 5 hours in that setting.
Pardon me while
I'm on. Hey, I just started working normal hours with the field house, and it takes a while to get used to working a normal schedule. But I think it's another option for the profession that we would want to have, you know, whether that ends up being clinical ownership and you know, starting their own practices. We would like that to be available for those people. It is a heavy lift. It is a long lift. We've obviously been doing it for a number of years, but I hope in the next 5 to 10, that's one of those bridges we finally cross. And I think it'll open up. I'm a high school athletic trainer, right? I was born to be that. That's what I wanted to be. I never really wanted to work at any other level. In the clinical setting where you're working with insurance and that type of setting is going to be for specific athletic trainers that want to do that. And I think sometimes our members are like, I don't want to get involved in that. You don't have to, but that rising tide will lift all the boats.
Tanya, maybe you can speak to this. I forget who the group is, but out of, I believe it's Texas, there's an athletic trainer posts it every year or every other year, who sits down and uses CPT codes and figures out exactly how much money they've saved. Now, going to what Rob said, third-party payers doesn't mean we're charging. It just means they can show statistically what we're saving the school district because they're not going to the PT clinic. They're not going to the chiro. They're not going to the MD. They're not going to urgent care. So that third-party idea is great and all, but some of us, knock on wood, don't have to do it, but it shows value.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, our third party reimbursement group's really been working on expanding. I think we have over 200 payers across the nation, but that was definitely something that we talked about showing the value of what you're saving those individuals. You have to be careful about saying saving, but what the value is specifically for that. But it's definitely something that we're seeing. I've even seen on collegiate level across the country to be able to bill in some of the different states. So it's definitely that part of it. In our area, Pennsylvania and New Jersey are working on expanding their practice act so their patients can be anybody, any individual, so not specifically defined. So those are areas that will allow us to be able to expand and work with any patient that would benefit from athletic trainers, being in the military or in the hospital setting, whatever the case may be. The other piece that we are working on, it's funny because you'll have physical therapists will say, well, how come you want to do that third-party reimbursement, right? Because it's just a pain. Well, here in Delaware, they're actually have been able to gain state funding to fund athletic trainers in every secondary school in the state. So that's a big piece of legislation that's moved over then that you may start to see a trend towards and expand in some of the other states.
Like they fund PTOTs at the school level? Is that what you mean?
Athletic trainers at the
So in California, they fund PTs and OTs at the public school level for needs of specific students. Is that how they're doing in Delaware?
Yeah. So if you hire an athletic trainer, you will have access to funding from the state to help offset the cost of that athletic training.
Got it.
Encouraging. So it's not a mandate, but it encourages all of those schools to bring in an athletic trainer to help improve safety of and well-being of the students. So
awesome.
That's another piece of it. The other thing we're seeing is telehealth.
Of course, yeah.
That'll be in the future as well.
I had no idea. I've been doing telehealth for 10 years, thanks to FaceTime, Skype, and rest in peace, Skype. But had no idea that's what it was called.
To just go on the theme of things that are coming in the future, and I think maybe in the less distance future, you know, if you look at intercollegiate athletics and this NIL world and the potential of professionalism of college athletes, and are they going to be employees? We're going to be talking about workers' comp in intercollegiate athletics soon, if that happens. So I think that's something that's coming, if that really comes to fruition. So I think that the changes that are happening there directly affect us in athletic training.
Couldn't agree more. Valerie, I thought you had something a second ago.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on what Tanya and Rob were talking about with, and Vicky as well, on third-party reimbursement. And I'm going to throw out kind of a controversial idea, but it was a bit of an aha moment for me. We do some guest lectures for our nursing department, and they asked us to share what ATs do. And I said, you know, in a lot of situations in a high school setting, we may be the only healthcare that student has access to, right? And the nurse pulled me into a group, and they're working on getting nurses back into the schools. Because when we were all little, most of our elementary, middle schools, right, had a full-time nurse. And now they, you know, my daughter's school had one for a half a day on Tuesdays. And so we really were, as athletic trainers, the only, and they're like, we're trying to get nurses back in school because it's great, you know, athletic trainers take care of athletes, but there's a lot of kids at the school who don't play sports. And so they have no access to a healthcare provider. And so we've been working with them. And I asked the question one day, I said, how are you funding this, by the way? Like, how are you, because this is a nationwide effort and they have been successful in some areas. And they said, well, we just build our insurance. Why wouldn't we? And that's how we fund the nurses. And I was like, just light bulb went off, right? And we're so averse to this in the athletic training setting because we're worried that a kid won't come in to see us if they don't have insurance, or they'd be worried about, you know, giving the expense to their family. But the nurses have it all worked out. You know, they're like, we'll treat anybody. If you've got insurance, we'll bill. And if you don't, that's okay. We'll just write that one off. And that's how they're getting full-time nurses back into the schools. And I think it's something we may need to think about in the future, right? Because, you know, a lot of athletic trainers are funded now through hospital systems. And as Rob mentioned, if you can't generate revenue, you're less valuable to that organization. And if we hit another big recession or an economic downturn and these hospitals have to make tough decisions, they're going to cut non-revenue generating positions. And that's what we are right now, unfortunately. We do, I mean, there's some referrals for sure, but because of, you know, federal anti-kickback laws, we can't require all of our patients to go back to the hospital or clinics for their care, you know, follow-up care. But sometimes it's harder to quantify the revenue we do generate. But I do think it's going to be some pressure on us to generate revenue at some point, and we're going to have to think about how to do that in an appropriate and ethical way.
I hate to say it, but you're correct. I saw it with two or three programs locally around here that have been cut in the last 6 months. And, you know, it's sad. Watch the admin fight for it. But right now, it's the state of healthcare, financial woes. And yeah, the first thing they look at is, okay, who's producing revenue and who's not? We didn't get into this profession, I hate to say, to make money. I mean, it's nice to make money. We got to pay our bills, but we got into it because it's a calling. We take care of people, and that's just who we are and what we do. We don't think about it. We just, one of you said it, just come in, we'll take care of you. That's how we think. I value all your time, but I also value that we all have jobs and have to do something. So I'm just going to take another minute, kind of go around the horn and give us some insight in what you'd like to tell a young professional or a person thinking about going into athletic training right now. Just a little pearl of wisdom you'd like to throw out for them for their future. Rob, how about you? A little pearl of wisdom for someone going into the profession.
So really mine is kind of twofold. One is to find, hopefully when you go through your undergraduate education or your graduate education now, you'll find that level that really speaks to you. Cause I think every athletic trainer finds that calling wherever that level is, wherever that setting is that really calls to them, and really explore that level. There's good and bad to both to any of those that you might, whether it's collegiate, whether it's pro, whether it's private, doesn't matter. There's always some give and take to that. But the other thing I would say is, and I can't say it strongly enough, is having that mentor, whether it's organic or whether, but having somebody to turn to have that conversation with is so vital. And there's many ways to do it, whether it's with your state association, whether it's volunteer. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. If somebody's listening to this and they're like, I'm in the middle of somewhere that there is no one else to reach out to, I promise you, I have never seen the people that I have served with in the NATA, get an ATA news, dry call, email one of the people that you see in those pictures and say, look, here's my story. And I'm out on an island. I have never met anybody that I have volunteered with that wouldn't take that phone call, that didn't answer that email and go, if it's not me, we'll get you connected. We will make this happen for you. And if it all else fails, call the bald guy from Nebraska. I will take the phone call. I will take the email and get somebody that you can reliably turn to help guide you through those early years. Cause that's when we lose them. And I think most of us would agree that that's when they're rough. It's a rough time for most young athletic trainers.
That's so true. How about you, Valerie?
Yeah, I think, you know, back to the salary issue, sometimes we're our own worst enemies. So I tell our students, I beg them, really, please don't take one of these low paying jobs, because you're part of the problem when you do. And that the university is like, well, why should we raise the salary? Because we can keep getting great people for peanuts. And it also hurts the staff who want to go to HR and say, we need to raise these salaries. We're not in line with national averages. And they're like, but you've been filling these positions every year. So let them go unfilled. And I think the reason our students are doing it, they get the message, well, you've got to pay your dues if you want to get Division I jobs, and maybe they want to stay close to home. But I tell our students, if you want to see salaries improve in our profession, don't take a low-paying job. They are graduating at probably the best time, and somebody else said this too, the best time in the history of our profession. There are so many jobs in so many settings with great pay. Take one of those, right? You'll find joy there too, I promise.
That nails it. Vicky.
I think it's important for young professionals to just remember that you don't know everything and nobody expects you to. So many people come out of the program and they're overwhelmed because of the things they don't know, or that, well, they didn't teach me this in their program, my program. You know, you came into an entry-level program, it's the beginning, and experience is the best teacher. Once you have the fundamentals down, experience becomes the best teacher. No one expects you to be perfect. So lean on your mentors. That's why you want to have mentors. Lean on them. Take advantage of opportunities that you have to learn. If you have a team physician, ask if you can go in one morning a week and do clinic with them, or go in with them to doctor's appointments if one of your athletes is going in. Talk to your doctors about different cases. Talk to other ATs. Create that network of people that you can call. And if you have nobody at the beginning, you really have to look to create that, but also call your faculty. If I'm one of Val's students, I'm going to call her up, or one of the other faculty there, or one of the clinical preceptors that you had on a clinical immersion, for example. Call up Eli if you worked with him for a whole semester.
Please do, anytime. Yeah. Please, give me a holler.
Yeah, so call those people up, lean on them. Nobody expects you to know everything. Nobody does. And we all, you know, the first thing that you really should understand is to be humble enough to know that you don't know what you don't know, and that you're going to learn something. I was told by a mentor, you should learn something every day.
You really should.
And you should, you know, and it might be in athletic training, it might be in something else, but if you learn something every day, you're in good shape.
Yeah. Tanya.
Yeah. First of all, I would say that you'll be entering the best profession out there with incredible personal and professional reward.
But we're not biased or anything.
Yes, we're not biased. Not at all. But seriously, it's awesome. The sky's the limit. I think I agree with everything that Val is saying. Don't take those low-paying jobs. But more importantly, be open to where the path is taking you. Right. I started off, I was breaking ground first, female athletic trainer in the industrial setting. Loved it. It was a new area back then. Right. And I loved it, but I came to New Jersey and they were limited on what we could do. And all of a sudden somebody walked up to me and said, oh, you want to apply for secondary school? And I said, oh, I don't know. Well, I'll just interview. I'll interview for the heck of it. And I did, and they offered what I was asking and then some. And I came there and had was there something that I thought was temporary? I was there for 31 years and enjoyed every moment of it. I really, truly felt that I was really not working. I loved my job. Now, granted, we get all, there's ups and downs to everything, but definitely been fantastic. So to Val's point, just be open to where it takes you. Maybe there's an industrial position and you saw yourself as a Division I college football athletic trainer. If, you know, you're open, it's amazing where this profession can really, truly take you. It can take you to the rodeo. It could take you to NASCAR. It could take you a lot of different places. Be open to your path. It isn't always what you planned it to be. Sometimes it's just better.
It could bring you to a location where you're talking to four district directors on a day and you never would have imagined it. So I couldn't agree with you more. I was NFL bound and I've been at the same high school now for 27 years. It's an interesting path. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful profession. Of course, all five of us are biased, but I don't think any of us would disagree with you make the best of what you have, you make your chances, and sooner or later, you're going to find the right fit. And once you do, oh, it's awesome. Rob, Tanya, Valerie, Vicky, this was awesome. Thank you so much for spending time with us today on Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. It was really insightful. Gabe, have fun editing this. You're going to be busy. I would love to have any and all of you back. This was so educational, I think helpful for so many of our listeners. And I could see us talking another hour or two, but yeah, at some point we all got to work. So thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Don't tell anybody because I blocked off 2 hours on my schedule for a podcast. So I'm taking the next, I'm gonna bonus the next 35 minutes. I'm not going back to work.
No problem. We won't let the boss hear this at all. Gabe, don't send that to his boss. You got it? Wink, wink. Have a great day, guys.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Hallett. It is produced by Gabriel Hallett. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Hallett Consulting, LLC.